Good morning.
Good morning.
Last weekend, I wasn't here because I went to the Lay Zen Teachers Association of America treat up in Garrison, New York. Anybody's familiar with Garrison, but it's just across the Bear Mountain Bridge, a little bit north, right on the Hudson River. From the retreat center, you can see West Point, which is on the other side of the river. There were, I think, 26 teachers from around the country, not only the White Plum lineage, which I'm in, but from a variety of lineages. It was an incredibly diverse group of people, diverse in terms of age. There were young teachers and older teachers. There were gay teachers, straight teachers, men and women, a variety of backgrounds, from a psychoanalyst who is a teacher, Barry Magid, you've probably heard of him, he's written a number of books. Writers, Susan Moon, who also has written a number of Zen books, social workers. Really a very, very diverse group of people. Jazz musician from all over the country, an organic farmer from Oregon, but all teachers. And what brought us together is the sense that we were lay teachers, that none of us are priests. We're not Buddhists and we're not priests. This, by the way, isn't my talk. I just thought I'd share this. It came to me when I was sitting. But I guess it's related. One of the things that was probably the most touching for me was how ordinary we all were. I think from all that we've read and stories we've heard, we tend to romanticize, you know, teachers or spiritual teachers of any, you know, whether they're Indian or Japanese or Chinese or Korean. But we were really an ordinary lot in this, really the best sense of what that means. Very human. You know, there are those of us who were divorced, others had children problems, struggling with being a teacher, defining what it is to be a teacher. And the other thing was, this meeting was focused on making a variety of decisions about how this group was going to go forward. And even though there were lively discussions and, you know, a lot of it was heartfelt, nobody dominated the meeting. There was no one teacher that dominated the meeting. It was really an equally shared experience, which was really, I thought, phenomenal. It was a great 3 days. I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed the company of all these teachers, and actually made a number of new friends, I think, that will endure. So I feel thankful for having gone. I'm really not the kind of person who gets involved with big groups and stuff, just not my cup of tea, I guess, but I'm glad that Ray talked me into going. So my talk today is, in a way, also on gratitude, which Merriam-Webster describes as a state of being grateful, thankfulness. Well, what I wrote was a few weeks ago. I think it was probably longer ago. But one morning I woke up, and I woke up late, and I knew I was going to have to hustle to get to work. I had a couple of reports that were due, a couple of meetings, a couple of personnel issues. I knew it was going to be a busy day. And I got up. As I got dressed, I looked out the window and I noticed that it was snowing pretty hard and it seemed to be sticking. And my reaction was, oh no, why is it snowing? I'm going to be late for work. Not only that, the roads are going to be slippery and it'll create a lot of traffic. And basically, I started whining to myself about my circumstances. And these observations were followed by me saying to no one in particular, damn. So I rushed to eat breakfast, skipped meditation, and went out to brush off my car. And on my way to the car, I noticed that I was wondering about how much snow I would have to shovel when I got home. I hadn't even cleaned off my car, and I was already preoccupied with, what am I going to do when I get back? So as I started brushing my car, probably from the physical exertion and from the habit that arises from years of meditation, I returned to my breath. And I started to relax and come back into the present moment. And as that happened, I suddenly noticed, or began to notice, the size of the snowflakes, which were huge, and if you really looked at them, really quite beautiful. And I started to look even more carefully and could see the actual shape of the snowflakes as they were falling to the ground. And my attention expanded, and I noticed how puffy, how light the snow was as it accumulated on the ground. And then I noticed on a tree in my front yard was covered with snow, all the branches. Not a leaf on the tree, but covered with snow. And just how beautiful that was. And I looked around, maybe a neighbor or somebody passing by, to just share this, the beauty of this experience. And I realized that I was alone. It was just myself and the snow. And now I was fully in the moment, fully alive, and had a sense of gratitude for the gift of just being alive. Now, the key here is nothing external had changed, but internally the focus of my attention had shifted. The morning, which turned out to be a huge pain in the ass, had become a gift that I almost missed, which was in itself stunning, that I could have missed this, all caught up in my self-created melodrama. A quote that I had read recently actually floated through my mind. This comes from the realm of psychotherapy, and it is, "Your life depends on what you do with what has been done to you." And this seemed to apply to that morning. You know, I had become a victim. You know, what had been done to me is it had snowed when I was in a hurry to get to work, when I had something important to do. And luckily, fortunately, I was able to shift my attention from being self-centered and worried to just simply being present. Over and over again, it seems that these lessons arrive to help us pay attention. I also realized that yet again, I am responsible for my life right here, right now. And if I close the gap between what I want life to be and what it is, I become life itself with no separation. There is no one who is a victim of life. There is just this life. And with this realization, again, comes a sense of gratitude. Meister Eckhart said, "If the only prayer you said in your whole life was thank you, that would suffice." Norman Fisher Roshi relates a conversation that he had with an old friend who had had a recurrence after many years of cancer. He says, "I think she is in a rather dire situation, but she seemed surprisingly cheerful and upbeat to me, even though she had just had major surgery and a few months ago just lost her sister to exactly the same cancer that she now has." He says, "She said to me, 'I don't spend much time on why me or thinking about all the terrible things that might and probably will happen. I'm just trying to stay with every day as I find it and do what I can.'" Many of you probably have heard of this, of Isan Dorsey. But Isan Dorsey was a Zen priest and also a very outrageous fellow who had for years been a drug addict and a famous female impersonator and was one of the co-founders of the Hartford Zen Center and Hospice, who died of AIDS in 1990. And just before his death, he gave a talk at the Hartford Street Zen Center many years ago in which he told people that he had AIDS. And in his talk, he said, "I don't say, why me? I say, why not me?" So whether it's something as minor as a snowfall or something as profound as AIDS, we don't always get to decide. It's as Bernie Glassman often says, to quote him, "To a large extent, we don't get to choose the ingredients that life presents, but we do get to decide how to make the best use of those ingredients." Thank you.